This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. Our emphasis is on innovative thinking and practices that have solid data and results. What if you could get rid of those aches and pains and have more energy just by tweaking the way you stand, sit, and walk? Today's guest expert is Jenny Maddox. She is a genius at teaching easy exercises and simple changes in what we do with our bodies, tweaks that make a huge difference. She is an award-winning author, educator, columnist, speaker, and licensed medical massage therapist. Her three-time award-winning book, R&R, Rescue and Relief for Computer Users and those at Risk for Repetitive Motion Injury, is a gem that has step-by-step illustrations of the exercises she teaches. She also does hands-on therapy and workshops to get people to move and feel better. In the first part of today's show, we'll look at how to avoid aches and pains from using computers and from how we stand and walk. Later in the show, we'll look at moving holistically to get more energy, better digestion, and address a number of health problems. Jenny, you started as a social worker. How did you get to be a holistic movement expert?
Well, I think actually it probably began before that. It probably is something that came from childhood because I had some disabilities myself. I was one of those people at the tail end of the polio epidemic. And self-care was the biggest way that we approached my well-being. So I think I grew into the social work position because at the time, it's the only way I could think of to try to impact people in large groups. Thinking, not really, being a little naive about what social work was, especially when you've got a mere four-year BA. So I had stars in my eyes, and I thought this was the way I was, and, you know, it was the 60s and 70s. So if you didn't know what to do, you thought you were going to do social work and save the world. I kind of sobered up a little bit and realized there might be other ways of approaching that.
But that got you on a holistic frame of mind and kind of set the canvas background.
Yes, I would say that's true. Plus the era. That was sort of a holistic, that was like the dawning of the holistic thinking as far as I was concerned. You know, there was a push to go back to nature, and I started working at a health food store, which probably opened my eyes to alternative therapies and holism. So, I think it's all part of the fabric you weave as you grow.
Now, a lot of the exercises you developed were to help with your own health problems?
That's true, but, you know, what really brings that home the most is computer work, because I've grown up, I'm in my 50s, can't believe I just admitted that, but, you know, you grow up accommodating and adapting and finding ways to move. So I've had that in place for many years, but when I got a computer myself, started feeling what so many of my clients present to me when they come to me as a massage therapist, it woke me up to how what I was doing unconsciously all these years was working on what hurt or was uncomfortable in the moment. When I learned early on to address discomfort as soon as possible, because that really is the way to keep it from compounding. So then when I started doing computer work, I realized, oh my gosh, here's a whole new set of problems. Coupled with being a massage therapist, I myself have to watch out for carpal tunnel and all those issues that I call them tissue issues that come with that. So it's common sense. It's common sense, but I started writing common sense down and developed a book out of it.
Well, it's common sense to you, but I think most people don't see it.
I've been accused of that before.
You probably see somebody at a computer and internally gasp and say, oh my God, the things they're doing to themselves. What do people do wrong at computers?
And this is part of our society, but computers makes it worse. We are folded forward. In fact, you know, as our listeners are listening to this, they might check in on their bodies, and you and myself also. We probably have our shoulders folded forward, which is an inward rotation, and I'll betcha that your head is sitting a few inches in front of the midline of your body. And most likely, there's a belly bulge. And who knows what we're doing with our legs and feet. I'll bet they're not sitting firmly and evenly on the floor. And when we do this position that I'm describing, we are prolapsing our organs together, which includes our lungs, and lungs need room to breathe. So we're inhibiting our very breath, our very life force. We can't live without breath. So when we impede that activity, a whole lot of other activities cascade. Hormones are released that we didn't mean to be released, and the body tries to make up for the stress of that poor posture.
What hormones are getting released?
Most people would know them as the stress hormones, the fight-and-flight hormones, because when our body is stressed, physically or through thought, through reaction to fear or danger, the hormone that's released is the one that is meant to ready us for some sort of activity, evasion or fight. Well, that's fine if it's released when it's necessary, but if it's released continually, we deplete that ability and we set up a situation where the body thinks we're its own enemy.
So just having our shoulders forward like that for long periods of time is setting up the fight and flight response system?
Isn't that incredible? That's the very truth. And here's the thing that might get people even more than that, is that becomes fattening. When that becomes fattening, especially women, we're going to pay attention to that.
So how does that become fattening?
Because the cortisol hormone, that's part of what the issue is to shut down digestion and to store fat in case you need it. You know, when we were in the caves and we needed that fight and flight hormone probably on a daily basis, that was important. We needed to probably conserve what resources we had in our body at the time. But that's certainly not true today.
So nothing's changed. We've gone from caves to cubicles.
Ooh, that sounds like the title of a book.
There you go. You know, we're talking about breaking little habits that people have. How do you break that habit?
This is so incredibly simple. And don't confuse simple with easy. But you could talk yourself into thinking it's easy, because repetition creates a habit. Repetition creates a habit. For instance, when you're driving to work in the morning, let's say you stop and get a Danish and coffee. Well, that's fine. But if you stop the next day and get a Danish and coffee, by the third day, your brain is telling you, oh my gosh, I think I want some Danish and coffee. And it's that simple. And so one of my little, I have these pet bottom line phrases that I call zingers. And one of them is, don't confuse a habit for a trait.
Mm-hmm.
When we say, I always do this, or I can't do that, and when we say that more than once, we start to talk we're telling our brain what we want to be reinforced. So we need to stop and think, now is that really what I want? And if not, the way to start a new habit is simply do what you'd rather have. Do the desire that you want repeatedly. Now the trick is that really what you want? Because sometimes we want to cling to our bad habits because we're getting some sort of reward. So what I say to that is, create a new reward. Create a reward for the desired behavior, the one that makes you feel good about yourself.
So at the computer, we want our shoulders back, our feet on the floor. How do you create a reward for that other than Danish?
This is one that takes trying it to believe it. But actually, when you start feeling better, and energy to me is a reward, and I think maybe the older you get, the more you understand that our real fuel is not food, our real fuel is energy. How much energy do we have to do all the things we need to do? And if we're a little bit hedonistic and we want to get the most bang for our buck, energy becomes a really important commodity. And when you start sitting better, and when your attitude reflects that posture, because that's what happens. Sometimes if you can't conjure up a good positive attitude, simply improving your posture facilitates that. then it becomes self-rewarding because you have more energy and you have a better attitude and it feels better to move when you don't hurt.
And part of that, too, then, is listening to your body more and noticing the difference. Otherwise, you'll miss the difference and slip back into the old habit.
You know, I broke this down, just exactly what you're saying, into four steps. I call it the healthy habit technique. And the first step is attend, paying attention. If you don't even know there's a problem, if you don't know, your body will tell you eventually. And it's usually in the form of pain or fatigue, a bad taste in your mouth, and a bad mood. All these things are telling you all is not well in your world. And that's the point to which you could pay attention, because everything's vying for our attention. So our body does give us clues. But I believe in the morning and at night before you go to bed, if you tell yourself, I want those clues to come to the surface, I think you start paying more attention to them, and then you can intercept them faster.
I bet the one about bad taste in your mouth is a surprise to a lot of people. Is that back to the fight and flight syndrome?
That is that, or it can be several things. It can be lack of water. That's a real big one. We're dehydrated because there's so much in our environment that dehydrates us. And that fight and flight has a lot to do with that, too. When our hormones are in gear in that way, we require more water. But here's the cool thing about drinking water. Not only does it help with that bad taste in your mouth, just on a cellular level, but the digestion of water creates molecules of energy. So it's another way to fuel ourselves with energy. And then also the thing about that bad taste, it can tell you that you've got a cold coming on, that you've got debris in your lungs, so maybe some deep breathing exercises could help clear that if you're listening. Or it could even be something intestinal, something to pay attention to and watch for, and maybe however you feel about alternative medicine, get some herbs, do an intestinal cleanse. It's hard to know exactly what it's telling you, but it's telling you something. So then you start asking for more information and paying attention to what suggestions your body gives you.
So our first step was to attend, and our second step is?
Intend. The second step is, okay, you know that you're feeling discomfort. You're sitting at that computer, and every day, let's say your eyes get tired. And so you pay attention to that you're bleary-eyed and not breathing deeply. And so then you make an intention, meaning, what would you rather have? And usually it's going to be lack of pain or lack of that bleary feeling every day. It may be that you intend that you want more energy and that you want to feel better, which would then bring us to the third step, which is the action step. And I call it pretend. Pretend is a play on words because sometimes you have to make believe until you buy what it is you're trying to accomplish. Sometimes, like when I work with people with weight issues, for instance, I had one woman say, I can't see myself, I can't visualize myself as what I want to be. I can only visualize myself the way I am. So you have to make sure that what you're going to visualize or what you want to desire is something you believe you can accomplish. So you may think, in her case, she started visualizing herself slightly thinner until she got there. And then she could go slightly thinner again. So when you're sitting at the computer, you know, the thing you want to pretend is that, and by pretend, again, I mean practice, is that you're going to do these exercises in my book, or you're going to use some common sense and know that you should look away from that screen for a few minutes. You should close your eyes and give it a rest.
Just like the athlete picturing themselves making that touchdown catch.
Exactly. It's an interconnectedness that never stops.
So are we at the fourth step now?
Fourth step is, remember the thing about repetition, that a habit starts with repetition, and what research is showing is that 21 days of sustained behavior will create a habit. So if you just practice it, then you can depend on your new habit. So you've got attend, intend, pretend, and depend.
With computer use, should we just focus on the habit of shoulders back, feet on the floor, and breathing well?
I'm going to give you a new zinger, a new bottom liner to remember, and it applies to posture everywhere, and particularly at computers, because what I've described to you is this posture we sit in actually shortens the muscles in the front of the body. So the muscles behind you on the backside are being overextended. So the muscles in the front, for the most part, we call flexors, and the muscles in the back we call extenders, and they're always trying to keep us from falling forward, those muscles in the back.
Mm-hmm.
If we're at a computer or in any position longer than 12 minutes, our muscles will shrink to accommodate whatever that position is in, or overextend, whichever their role is in this posture, and then that becomes the habit. So when you stand up, for instance, after sitting at a computer or maybe being in your car, you feel stiff, and that's because that has happened. All of your tissue has shrunk to fit that that position. The trick is, every time you get up, this is a back saver. This is probably the biggest thing I like to share with people, because it can actually keep you from having back issues. Every time you get up, you should arch your back slightly in the opposite direction. And every time, like even if you're sitting, you can do that with your shoulders by pulling your arms behind you and stretching in that position. So basically, everything that's bent forward needs to be bent backward. And you don't have to do it to a degree that's going to hurt you. You use, again, a common sense about this. Just enough to feel better. You'll know when you try it. But the trick is to do it often, because if our tissue is solidifying in 12 minutes, then giving yourself a stretch in the morning or doing it at night when you get home is not really enough to make the difference that I'm talking about. So we incorporate that into the way we're doing things. Every time we get up, arch our back a little bit. While you're sitting at the computer, do a shoulder shrug. Keep moving, and it doesn't have to interrupt what you're doing.
So as long as we take a minute every 12 minutes, we're going to be in a lot better shape.
Tremendously, I promise it.
I see some people sitting on gym balls. Is that a good thing to do?
That's so interesting. There's so much more to that than people understand. You know, I even think that there are implications that it would help. I haven't seen research on this. This is just coming to me. But I think it would help with people who are hoping not to get Alzheimer's. You know, a lot of us are trying to keep our brains active. Well, what that does, it stimulates the brain in all these balancing bodies called proprioceptors that we have in our body. And the proprioceptors are these little organelles. They're everywhere. We don't even know, you know, as people, we never pay any attention to them, because they're these little silent workers that are figuring out how to keep us from falling, how to be balanced. So when we sit on a ball like that, those little proprioceptors, they just wake right up, and they keep us from falling over. It's very stimulating to the brain.
So we're getting a micro workout by sitting on a ball.
Yes, that's a good word for it.
Should we be concerned about carpal tunnel syndrome in computers, and is there a way to avoid it?
Yes. And we should watch it at early ages now, because children are doing so much with gaming. Basically, carpal tunnel is just one of many syndromes that have to do with doing things over and over and over. Repetitive motion injury has to do with a lot more than carpal tunnel, and many of the other syndromes accompany carpal tunnel. For instance, many people who have this issue will have a TMJ problem, because our bodies don't just use one muscle at a time. They don't use just one nerve pathway at a time. We are so interconnected that different syndromes are set up by the same repetitious behavior.
And TMJ would be the tight, painful jaw.
Yes, right. And basically, another zinger I have for you is, and this has to do with carpal tunnel and TMJ and all that, is if we could just keep our muscles longer than our bones, we wouldn't have all this problem.
Hmm.
And the reason I say that is, our bones are connected by muscles, which have the endings are called tendons. That's how we move. Now, if we had perfect muscle health and they were stretched out to the length that they're meant to be for their optimum efficiency, we would not have any joint problems.
Mm.
But when over time, time and over behaviors and bad postures and so forth, these muscles start to shorten, and that pulls the bones together at the joint, and then all kinds of problems start happening. And that's basically what's happening with carpal tunnel is we're using our hands in such a way that shortening the muscles, which is shortening the tendons, which is compromising the joints and the blood vessels and the nerves and all that good stuff inside. And if we just knew how to warm up the tissue first, then stretch it, we could keep our muscles longer than our bones.
And it's going to fit through that narrow opening better.
Exactly. That's that piece. But there's so much you can do about it that, you know, I'm kind of painting a bleak picture because it sounds like you have to be moving all the time, but it really doesn't take that much to address it.
Well, what does it take?
Movement. Movement's a good one and an easy one because you can move while you're sitting in your chair. You can move by paying attention. Music helps. I find that music helps anyway. And rubbing. And unless you're already having a carpal tunnel syndrome that's so severe that you can't use one hand, got a tool. You know, you've got your hands. You can use balls. If you do have a carpal tunnel problem, you can use a tennis ball. You can use a handball. And you just create friction and warmth. That's the bottom line about that. Yes, there are techniques for massage, and yes, there are better ways to do it, but basically, we have the tool, and what we need to do is apply some pressure and some movement with that tool, and hey, you've got a self-massage going. And we should rub what hurts. We shouldn't be afraid of that. So many people are afraid, oh my gosh, if this hurts, rubbing is going to hurt it worse. Well, you are the determiner of that, because when something hurts when you're rubbing it, you can back off a little bit. If you rub it at that just tender, not so painful that it brings tears to your eyes, you're actually flushing toxins from that site, and that's what's wrong. They need those toxins moved from that site, and it moves through your lymph channels, and moving it with your hands is the best way to do it.
And what's really nice about this is you can do these exercises while you're watching TV, you're at a traffic light in a line in the post office or something. It doesn't take any extra time.
Exactly. And I made sure that they could be done in 30 seconds to a minute, even less in some cases. You know, there's nothing to sitting in traffic and bringing your shoulders up under your ears and letting them drop.
You don't have to stand on your head to do this, huh?
That's right.
Well, let's take a break. This is America's anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, your source for cutting-edge thinking on being youthful at every age. Today's expert guest is holistic movement expert Jenny Maddox. Her website is www.holisticmatters.net. That's HOLISTICMATTERS.net. Notice that's .net rather than .com. Her site has lots of tips and information on her blog, a newsletter, and on her fabulous book priced at only $21.95 with all those illustrations. It's a steal. And her email address is Jenny, that's G-I-N-I, at holistichealthmatters.net. Information on anti-aging psychology and my free Defy Aging newsletter is at drbricky.com. That's drbricky.com. Or you can just go to notaging.com, and it will take you to drbricky.com. JD, what are the common problems people make with posture and walking?
Again, we're too forwardly folded or inwardly rotated. We use our head to lead us instead of walking in a balanced way. You know, everything seems to be about balance. And even people who are bodybuilders and are really tuned into exercise, they tend to overdevelop their flexor muscles, their lifting muscles, and then the extensor muscles, the muscles that are meant to stabilize, and that's usually our back muscles, they have to try to keep up, and they don't have that capability. They're not that kind of muscle. So balance is where we should be keeping our intention. Learning to, if we just kept the tissue warm, and we could start in the morning with a nice warm shower, or basically pumping our arms and legs to get things moving, that really gets the tissue warmed up. The fascia is this interconnective tissue that gets cold, and when it gets cold, it gets semi-solid, so it makes us stiff. So So if we kept ourselves warmed up through movement, through massage, through self-massage, through hot water, those kinds of things, things that common sense tells you makes you warmer, we would be able to move easier, and posture would not be such a sometimes crippling thing, and walking would be something that's effortless, where we swing our hips and find a gait that is comfortable. But it just takes a little bit of attention and then practice to make that happen.
So we all should be swinging our hips?
Yes, you should be swinging our hips. Sometimes this sounds crazy, but and remember, I'm this a person who had polio, so walking is not exactly the easiest thing for me, but I have found a gait, and someone gave me this tip. They said, when you're swinging your arm, pretend that the person in front of you is trying to hand you a coin, and so you're trying to reach for that coin with your hands. Well, when you do that, you'll notice that your legs start swinging along with your hands, and it becomes a gait. And there have been times I've been trying to walk up a hill, and that has saved me. It was like pulling me up the hill to have that swinging and that momentum going. And also, you just feel like your joints are well greased. I don't know how to explain it, but just try it, and you'll see what I mean.
I remember things about imagining a string was pulling up your head. Does that help?
From the very center of your head. And that particular imagery goes a long way to correcting your entire posture. I encourage everybody to do this right now. Just imagine that there's a string in the dead center of your head, and someone from above is going to yank your string, so to speak, and it's going to pull you up so that, and this is important, your chin becomes parallel to the floor. This is really, really important, and the cool thing about that is you'll notice that your stomach goes in where it belongs at the very same time, and that helps elongate your rib cage, which means your lungs have more room, and your hips will be seated evenly on the seat you're in. Or if you're standing, you'll notice that you'll be standing with both feet with equal amounts of weight. So just that one image is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Now, something you said a few minutes ago, I would think that most people who exercise with equipment would be well advised to really study whether the exercise is balancing the muscles instead of overdeveloping the flexors?
Right, overdeveloping flexors, yes. I think that's really true. I think that's where some education is very important when you're going to do weight training.
Mm-hmm. Many people have one leg that's longer than the other. Does that matter?
It matters a lot. Often the diagnosis is a muscular diagnosis rather than the actual length of the bones. In fact, I think the research says 90% of people who have one leg longer than the other really have the musculature in their hip has contracted on one side more than the other, or it can even be low back. And it hikes and usually torques, which means twist pelvis in such a way that functionally one leg is longer than the other. The good news about that situation is it can be changed, it can be affected, but the only way to tell the difference actually is an x-ray.
Who knows how to identify that and how to correct that?
Any doctor that has access to x-rays would be able to do that. A chiropractor would be able to do that. A massage therapist would not. But what you would do for both cases as a massage therapist would be virtually the same. Even if it's something that absolutely the bones are longer on that side of the body, you still would want to soften that tissue on both sides and make it so that the person could be as comfortable as possible. Whereas if it's just the function of tense muscles in the gluteal part of the body, the buttocks and the hip and the lower back, same thing. You would want to soften that up and do some stretching and some heat, that kind of thing.
And the x-ray you're talking about is just of the hip area?
No, they would need to do from hip the full length of the leg.
Mm-hmm. All the way?
Any of those bones could be part of the problem.
All the way down to feet?
Right.
Speaking of feet, what do we need to know about taking care of our feet and how it affects everything else?
Boy, your feet, I remember when I worked all day at the health food store on cement floors, and my husband was kind enough that he would stop in during the middle of the day, and we'd find a place somewhere in the back of the store, and he'd rub my feet, and oh my gosh, it meant I could work the rest of the day. It was just incredible. So for one thing, your feet can be an amazing healing tool, whether you believe in reflexology or not. And reflexology is the study of reflex places on the foot. That body of information is that there are places all over the body that can be affected by these places on the foot. On that level, healing goes on. But just in how it makes you feel, how it seems to ease the pain out of the rest of your body, is healing in itself. Because remember, every single thing that happens sets off a cascade of hormones. And if you're feeling something good, that has its own set of hormones, just as well as the stress hormones that are released when something dangerous or fearful happens or stressful. So anything you can do to feel better is going to impact your entire body, and your feet is a wonderful place to start. So that also means that if your feet are uncomfortable, your whole body is going to translate that to discomfort. One of the things I suggest for people at work is to take another set of shoes and trade shoes during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Change shoes, that helps. And if you could sneak those shoes off, sit there without them, who knows, maybe you could even rub your own foot. And I promise you, you're going to like it. It's not quite as much fun as when someone else does it for you, but it still does the trick.
Yeah, I hadn't thought that the muscles are getting overflexed or tight just from walking or standing, and that a foot massage might do wonders.
Just wonders. Really, we should have people coming through offices just to do that for people. And I also have this idea that wouldn't it be great when you wake up from surgery, if someone, when you're coming out of surgery, if someone were rubbing your feet when you came to?
I think in hospitals and nursing homes, they could cut medication by at least a third just by having some massage therapists there to help out with the muscle pain.
Maybe we could even train like what used to be candy stripers. You know? We could have muscle therapists going in and training people to do this so everybody got it. Boy, we might really heal people.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what it is facilitating their own healing.
Anything we need to know about shoes?
Shoes, of course, yes. And everybody, you know, I would never tell someone what kind of shoes to get, because I know from my own problems that all feet are different. And I know from working on people, all feet are different. A lot of times people will go and get orthotics, which are inserts.
Mm-hmm.
That help realign the body by the shape that the foot stays in when you're using these orthotics. The only caution I have about that, I think that's a good thing, but if you're doing real therapy to change, say you've got one leg longer than the other. Well, if you're working on that and you're doing therapy maybe with a massage therapist or a physical therapist or whatever, you're on your own, if you're going to change the way those tight muscles have been, you're going to need to get different orthotics. So I would caution people to pay attention to that. If you have orthotics and now you're really doing things and getting better and better, you might want to make sure that those orthotics are still serving you.
So it's like losing weight. You have to get a new wardrobe, and if you get healthier, you need new orthotics or maybe no orthotics.
That's right. But yes, shoes are really important, so don't put up with something that hurts. Don't put up with something that hurts. Now, I did for many years, and because of the way my foot is shaped, and when whoever invented those crepe soft, thick soles on shoes, they changed my life. They really did. I can walk anywhere now, but before that, it's really difficult.
At home, are we better off walking barefoot or wearing some kind of shoes or slippers?
That depends on the person. For instance, being overweight is harder if you're walking barefooted because you run the risk of flattening your arch. So probably wearing shoes is a better idea, but then if you're thinking about needing to stimulate those reflex places on the bottom of your foot, it's better to walk barefooted. So again, it's an individual decision, I think, and probably balance is the best idea, so maybe do a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm. I see shoes that have little spikes in them, and
right. There's
shoes modeled after Maasai warriors. Have you seen any that especially impressed you as helping a lot of people?
Well, I know a lot of people really like Birkenstocks, and I know some people like the Earth shoes, which similarly had a different, they kind of let your heels be lower than the front of your feet. Again, there are so many, how your body is set up and the posture you have depends on the patterns you've developed over the years. So what works for one person might not work for the other. Some people love those little nubs that are supposed to stimulate the reflex places. Some people, it drives them crazy. So if I were more of an expert to say this and this and this would fit this and this and this type, but I think people just have to go try them on and see what works for them. I need the soft, cushy stuff. Some people would need a harder, something that's more unyielding. It's too varied to really give any kind of certainty to that.
So you need to experiment and actually try them out for a few hours and see what works for you.
You really do. And I find, you know, if you take them home and walk around in them and don't get them dirty, more places will take them back than you think.
Let me take a break. This is America's anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, with the Ageless Lifestyles Radio, your source for cutting-edge thinking on being youthful at every age. Today we're talking to holistic movement expert Jenny Maddox. Her website is holisticmatters.net. Make sure you got .net there. Her site has lots of tips, information on her blog, a newsletter, on her videos, and her fabulous book. And her email is jenny@holisticmatters.net. Information on anti-aging psychology and the free Defy Aging newsletter is at drbricky.com. That's drbricky.com. Or just go to notaging.com. Jenny, one of the things that you advocate is that walking better and moving better gives us a lot more energy. How does that work?
Almost all of our basic needs, I've noticed that if they're done in balance, get more energy from them, like eating. You have to eat for energy, but if you eat too much, it takes your energy. And I found that to be true about movement. When I have workshops, we make a list of what gives us energy and what takes our energy. And movement is always one of the ones that you put in the both columns. It gives us energy and it takes our energy if it's out of balance. Many things are going on physically. That metabolism is increased when you move. So they call that actually catabolism because the movement itself causes an energy molecule to be released. I almost, when you think about the chakras, the energy centers up and down the body, and in the Hindu way of looking at the energy systems of the body, you're making that energy move from the bottom chakra up to the top when you're moving. So that distributes energy. If you're thinking about meridian, like acupuncture in Chinese medicine, the way they look at it, movement makes the energy move along the circuit in a more efficient way. And then if you think about physically in the way Western medicine looks at the lymph system, now the lymph system, you know, are these channels that take toxins and move them to the kidneys, through the back to the heart even, and distributes then the white blood cells and the things that are actually delivering nutrition. Again, it's movement, and it's only movement as far as that's concerned. The heart doesn't pump that stuff. Only movement does. So you're not going to get nutrition to the rest of your body unless you move. There you go. There's at least four different philosophies.
So choose the brand that you like to explain it, but it works.
Right, right.
Rather than plastic surgery, are there exercises a person can do to have a more energetic, youthful face?
That's a really good question. Actually, this will probably surprise you, but I hang upside down towards that end.
I would love to do that. I can't figure out a place to hang the hooks on the inversion boots.
Well, instead of the inversion boots, I have, and this is not quite a strap, it's a slant board. And it's a freestanding one. So you actually strap your ankles in, and it's like a teeter-totter. Wherever you put your arms will then change the position you're in. So finally, when you have your arms right above your head, you'll tip almost, but not quite, upside down. It feels great. And what's happening is that not only is it helping, it's cheating gravity is what it's doing. We're defeating gravity when we're upside down like that. It's also pulling the bones away from each other, like when I was describing what to do if you want your muscles to be longer than your bones. Mm-hmm. It's pretty gentle traction, a method of traction, so that if you hang there long enough, your muscles, your nerves will tell your muscles to let go. Your muscles will then elongate at the very tapered ends called the tendons. And you really do get longer. You can restore your height that way. And at the same time, you're cheating gravity and you're getting more circulation in your face. But beyond that, if you don't do, and you can like hang off your bed, just get some of that going for your head. But be careful. I don't want anybody falling on their head. So, but another thing you can do is make sure that you're gentle with your skin. Some of us have grown up treating our faces like we do everything else about our body, like it will always be okay, and we end up maybe with places where our skin is thinning, and now we have dark places where we've kind of abused that part of our face. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is be gentle and always stroke upward.
Mm-hmm.
We want to do strokes upward, and if you go to a massage therapist and she's young or he's young, they may not realize that. It's your body. You take control, and if you think that they're pulling downward on your face, just, you know, tell them you'd rather them do the upward stroke. So that kind of
thing. The inversion's also going to help with disc problems.
Yeah.
My father used to kid that he was being downsized and getting shorter. This will help prevent downsizing of your height.
Yes, right. And you'd want to start out slowly at first so that you can get those muscles that aren't used to that elongation. You don't want them to spasm in response. So just do it a couple minutes at a time. And finally, I can do it for about a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's where I meditate. So.
One of the tips that you inadvertently gave us is one of the ways to tell a good massage therapist is whether they stroke upward on the face. How else would you judge whether a massage therapist is really doing what he or she should be doing?
You would want to know how much training they have, but even so, that's not always what constitutes a good massage therapist. But I must say that I was forced to go to massage school 3 different times because I would move from state to state,
mm-hmm.
and that's tricky. Licensing's not reciprocated from state to state. But with my education, I definitely became a better massage therapist. But also, probably you're going to want someone who's intuitive and compassionate. And how you find that is tricky, too. You know, you might be good at... I would look, when I hit town, for instance, a new town, and I want a massage, I go to the health food store, and sometimes I go to the library. It's interesting. And at the library, I just ask people there. Librarians are, if it's a small area, librarians know their community really well.
Mm.
And a health food store the same way. And sometimes you can find publications, free publications in the health industry here, there, and everywhere, and they will have ads. And I intuitively look at the ads, and if they say holistic, I know they think like I do, and I probably would find affinity to that. But maybe somebody doesn't want that. Maybe somebody wants someone who's just going to kind of shut up and rub them. And I think you'd be able to tell by the way they place their ads, and if they're going to the trouble to do that,
mm-hmm.
I think that tells you something about them, too. Sometimes you can see a person reflected even their Yellow Page ad. That would not be me, though. I have one little line in there. I'm not sure how to tell you about that. And I trust. I sort of have good luck, and I trust my luck. So the people I find seem to be the people I needed.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you set your intention that you want to find someone who's really a good therapist for you, maybe the law of attraction kicks in.
Okay. I'm reminded that I used to go to a massage therapist who was very, very good at massage, but she was an unhappy, negative person. And after a while, I just said, this isn't good for me.
Ooh, that's a good point. Anything in the healing, including the MD that you might have to choose. I think somebody with positive attitude is always going to be a better choice.
Yeah, I mean, I've changed doctors just because I concluded the person was a pessimist, and I want someone who's looking for how something can be done instead of why it can't be done.
You know, we didn't talk about this yet, but I had breast cancer. What made the most difference to me was the surgeon on my way out after our consultation. He hugged me, and he said, you're going to be just fine.
Wow.
And that just meant, it was like my grandpa was there.
Mm-hmm.
It just meant so much. Yeah, we need to follow our intuition and how someone makes us feel, because that's part of our healing.
One of the things I love about your exercises is they're so simple, they're so easy. You know, Pilates is very good, but you have to be a contortionist sometimes to do the exercises. But yours, you don't have to get a sweat up or anything, and you see the results so quickly.
If someone would like to try this right now, it's as simple as this. We could just turn our chin, keeping our nose, our forehead, and our chin in alignment. Just turn your head all the way to the right and look over your right shoulder and stop where it feels a little painful, like a stretch, and then bring your chin back to mid-center, and then turn your head all the way to the left, and when you get to where it stops, look and see what you can see. Where's your area of vision? Now turn your head back to center, and then go back to the right again, and lo and behold, your head goes further around the other way. You can see further just by that little exercise. And if your head goes all the way around, then you've got a whole nother issue going.
Head spinning, huh?
Yeah.
So that little exercise alone is also going to help with the computer use.
Exactly. That's one of my favorites. And it's a dramatic one because it's so fast. Already, that's all your muscles needed. And if you do it 3 times, you'll be really amazed at how far around you get. And it's that fast. And then you go right back to work. I teach in the book breathing along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically, when you're doing the stretch, you're exhaling. And when you're returning from the stretch, you're inhaling. And you're feeding your body when you do that. And after a while, because your body knows it needs it, it adopts that as the habit very easily because it does know that you need it.
Jenny, in my book, you're part of a long tradition of therapists who solve their own problems to develop systems, like Frederick Alexander with voice problems and Moshe Feldenkrais with knee problems and Pilates who had asthma and rickets and rheumatoid fever. I think it's wonderful the way you've come up with such easy-to-do exercises that incorporate balance and just bring everything together so holistically, the breathing, the energy, the digestion, the posture, from head to toe, you really are a gem.
Oh, I love being included in along with all those people. Thank you so very much.
And you've got an advantage over them. Some of them have passed on.
Hey, that's right. That's right. That's a wonderful thing to think about, and it feels better to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, need is the mother of invention. You know, without those difficulties, perhaps we never would have gotten around to finding out these things. So it really is a blessing in everything.
And I think it starts with believing that there must be a better way, and I'm going to find out how to feel better when I walk and sit at a computer and everything else I do.
Right. And if I can help people know that you don't have to keep hurting in the same way, then, boy, that really makes me feel like I've been here for a purpose.
Thank you so much for being with us. You've been listening to America's anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, with the Ageless Lifestyles Radio, your source for cutting-edge thinking on being youthful at every age. Today's expert guest is holistic movement expert Jenny Maddox. Her website is holisticmatters.net. Make sure you get .net. Her site has lots of tips and information about her blog, a newsletter, and videos, and her fabulous book. Her email is Jenny, G-I-N-I, at holisticmatters.net. Information on anti-aging psychology and my free Defy Aging newsletter is at drbricky.com, or you can just go to notaging.com. I'd love to get your feedback and comments. You can send them to radio@drbricky.com.